I'll pass the mic over to Lynn, who is our first speaker. And are we lined up that way? I'm not sure if it goes that way. But Lynn Matthews Anderson is our first panelist.
I've particularly enjoyed being able to be part of these lists, especially in light of this little white ribbon that I am wearing. I don't know if everybody is aware of the symbolism of this little white ribbon that some people are wearing. This is more or less to symbolize a protest against the silencing of women's voices in the church, in our society, and so forth. One really nice thing about the Nets is that nobody can interrupt. You have a chance to say what you want to say, say it for as long as you wish to say it, and as often. And you never know if somebody's, you know, flushing your, or it's very rare that people will say, well, I never read anything by so-and-so. And that's a unique experience, especially for women in this society, to be able to speak up without having other people take over the discussion. And I think that it's been interesting to see how the list I've been on, I think the first list, which is LDSNet, which David is going to talk a little bit about, I've been on the lists, both of the main lists, since their inception. And the nicest thing that's been happening over the past year has been the addition of more and more women who have been willing to speak up and give their views. I was, for a long time, practically the lone female voice. That was particularly true of LDSNet. And it was a kind of lonesome, interesting experience to raise certain potentially controversial topics and realize that I was pretty much on my own. Occasionally, some men would also chime in on the same side, and that was heartening. But I was very glad when other women discovered this list and signed on and started speaking up. That was very important to me.
Hey, Pat, move back to me. Just for a little bit more historical context, there are several lists listed on several discussion groups listed in your handout. If you don't have a handout, you might ask afterward. We have a few extras that we have at the door. But there are several lists. Are they about a couple years old? We'll get David's history giving. And
5 years old.
Okay, 5 years old. But those lists are available. I think the instructions are clear enough to get on if you want to. If you have access to a computer that has access to the Internet, which it would include virtually any academic institution nowadays, as well as increasing numbers of commercial establishments and government agencies, then you should be able, or if you want to pay for it via a commercial database, you can get on the Internet and enjoy that. Sometimes the commercial databases have free offers, 6 hours or 10 hours of free time. That would be a way to get initiated. I also wanted to say, just give me my piece here, I remember how intimidating it was for me to make my first posting. I lurked for a while. I'm sure that John will mention this, but it is a certain breaking in. It's a certain aggressive act for me to say, hello, I'm Brent Wilson, and this is what I think. I guess we could call that finding my voice within this community of the network members, but I have a certain sympathy based on my recollection of my watching for a while before I ever broke in and said anything. I have a certain sympathy for people who get on the net, listen and watch and look at this total chaos and then say, wow, I'm not sure I really fit in here. It's something similar to giving your first sacrament meeting talk or something like that.
One of the things I found interesting, too, is that some people would post privately. They would find a message that they had found compelling or interesting or something that they really strongly agreed with, and they would send private messages rather than public messages, and several people would receive encouragement, you know, please say this publicly if you can, if you feel like you can, and some people have and some people have not, and that was interesting to me to see that people sometimes had to get their feet wet in a kind of safer environment because there are diverse points of view, and some people are much nicer and much more diplomatic about expressing themselves than other people. And especially, I think, for women who are not necessarily used to being called apostate and other kinds of things, other pejoratives, It can be a very difficult kind of experience to be tossed into this maelstrom of opinion, of strong feeling about certain kinds of topics, and I'll leave it to your imagination to figure out what those topics are. This is David. He's my husband.
I thought, since I've been involved with one of these lists since its inception, I thought I would say a little bit more about the history of these groups. My own involvement with the Internet goes back to 1976, when it was called the ARPANET, and that's when I first became involved with electronic discussion groups. And for many years, I was sort of surprised and disappointed that no one had started one on LDS topics, but I didn't know enough other Latter-day Saints with email connections to try to start one myself. And then in 1988, three fellows, Darren Lee, Michael Fetterman, and Richard Hyde, started LDS. And initially it was somewhat small, but sort of everyone who knew someone else told somebody, and it networked out fairly quickly. During the first year, there were a total of about 1,000 messages that were distributed to the list members. Days and even weeks would go by with no messages at all, which is quite surprising by current trends. The volume doubled roughly every year until 1992, and the volume sort of repeated the volume of 1991 at about 4,000 messages. I think the volume sort of leveled off because Mormonel came into existence and there were sort of other forums for people to talk on. This year the volume has gone up again on LDS. We're averaging about 20 messages a day now, which should run out to about 7,000 messages this year. And of all those 40 megabytes of material, I think I've read everything. And which leads me sort of to my next topic, which is the sociological and psychological effects of these large discussion groups. This is something that's been studied by various academicians, and there are basically two effects that come out in these studies. One is that these groups are remarkably disinhibiting, that people find themselves saying things in what is a very public setting that they would normally never say, and behaving in ways that are really atypical for them, being very open about their feelings and practices and attitudes. These discussion groups are also very addictive, and from time to time the notion comes up, you know, we need self-help groups to help people sort of learn to put this in its proper place. For myself, I've found that this is a third component in my own private personal church experience, that there's my family church experience, my ward church experience, and my network church experience, and they're all, I think, to some extent, equally important and satisfying and frustrating. to give you sort of a sense of how this is different from other things that you might be more familiar with, one example would be an in-person study group in someone's home. We've done a number of those in our home, and what tend to happen to us is that the study group grows in popularity and more people want to come until the group becomes so large that it can't really function anymore. And this happens in sort of a different way on the network. More and more people sign on, and the volume just goes up and up and up until, you know, 100 messages a day are coming over on Mormonel, and people drop off, and the group becomes smaller because they can't keep up. Another difference is that I think this sort of electronic discussion enables and empowers those who don't do well in other settings. I'm someone who, at least I think of myself as not being very good on my feet. I don't like speaking up in a public group. I like having the chance to sit back and think about what I'm going to say. I can take my time. I can reason it out. I can go over it with an editor and present it sort of in a way that I'm happy with. It's also leveling because until today, we hadn't met many of each other. We don't know much about each other's ages, professions, until we get to know each other better electronically. Initially, you have no real idea of someone's status, their calling in the church, their gender, their age. Those things become much less important, and you get to know the person a little bit before you figure those things out. That's really nice. but in another way, I think the network is more like a regular ward because we don't really get to choose who we're participating with. There are it's just anybody who happens to show up is there, much like church. And in some sense, I think that's one reason why, you know, to sort of paraphrase Eugene England, perhaps the network is as true as the church. And all. And on that note, I'll pass the microphone along.
I'm Stacey Burton, and just a couple of thoughts that I had about this. I think one of the things that's an advantage of these discussion groups is that it's a place where people can ask questions that most people cannot ask in their Sunday school classes, and where real discussion can occur. It can also is a place where you can have real discussions with people who in real life you probably would never talk to, because you would meet each other in church, and on the basis of age, appearance, political difference, whatever, you just would never talk to each other. But I have had conversations in this medium with people who I know I would probably never have talked to at all in church, people who have responded to messages I have posted, or people whose messages seemed so surreal to me that I was forced to respond to what they had to say. You know, so I think it's a valuable form in that sense. Going along a little bit with what David said, it's so strange to see that all these people have faces. Like, it's very different. It's a format that in some ways equalizes voices, because everyone can send messages. There's not a distinction between you don't have a particular church calling, you didn't go to church last week, whatever person. It's a ward that, if it is a ward, it's a ward without hierarchy, it's a ward without the kinds of discrimination that it's easy for us to fall into in everyday life. It's a possibility for the kind of discussion that you have with, that otherwise you might have with good friends or in a discussion group, or you know, I don't know if this is your experience. I've lived in a lot of wards where all of the good discussions about the gospel take place in the hallway. And this is sort of like spending a lot of time in the hallway. And it has a real virtue for that reason. It's a good way to explore your ideas and get some kind of feedback on them instead of just having them inside your own head. A couple of negative things about it. It's been mentioned that it can be seductively time-consuming. I have found really that, though, that the only thing that I see negative about it is that it reminds me too often of some of the more screwy or weird aspects of Mormonism that it's occasionally nice to try and forget, you know, for a week or a few weeks at a time. I think I've had more contact in the last 6 months or 8 months since I signed on these lists, for instance, with people who have a meaningful relationship with the John Birch Society than I had ever had in my whole life, except for when the Idaho director of the Birch Society was in my parents' ward and was mentioning the Constitution a lot. So it is an interesting and it is a very diverse community, but you have, like I said, you have conversations that you would not have imagined having otherwise.
Oh, me already.
Yep.
My name's Carl Best. When we started talking about putting this panel together, and we decided, well, what's everyone going to talk about? And we decided, well, let's just talk about whatever we want to talk about, no planning at all. I thought, well, I've got to at least have something to talk about. So Brent says, well, you know, pick a topic. I think the reason that I'm participating on these mailing lists, or why I get so much out of it, I go to church on Sunday and go to Sunday school, go to priesthood meeting, and hear the standard lesson out of the standard manual, and hear the standard questions from the instructor, and hear the standard responses, and just doing the standard things every standard Sunday for every standard year in my whole standard life. I get on this mailing list, and I start hearing some real questions, some real intelligent questions, and some real intelligent answers. Sometimes that's sarcastic, sometimes not. But the ability here to talk with others with the same interests, the same inquiring minds, you know, I really get a lot out of this. You know, it's like attending Sunstone every day for the entire year. As Stacy said, it's the conversations in the hall that you learn the most from, and we're having conversations in the hall every day, all day long.
Sometimes it takes all day to get through the mail.
I arrive in the morning and spend the first hour of every morning. I've been trying to come to work early to justify this, but the first hour of every morning I wade through the mail that's accumulated since the previous afternoon. But here on this list, I can have conversations with people that share similar interests. I can ask questions that I wouldn't dare ask in Sunday school, because you know, the same instructor, the same lesson, the same questions, and the same answers. I'm in a group situation, I'm sort of quiet and shy sometimes. I don't really like speaking up, and it's kind of hard for me to butt in on somebody else's conversations already going on. But on a list like this, I can speak my mind. If somebody's saying something, and as Lynn pointed out, you respond. You write your message and send it off, and nobody can interrupt you in the middle of that, writing that message. You speak your mind and you send it off. If somebody else chooses to ignore it, that's fine. But you know that somebody's going to read it. There are some people listening to what you have to say. But again, if I try to carry on these types of conversations in the ward, in Sunday school or in elders' quorum, it wouldn't last more than about 30 seconds. You know, I'd either get shouted down or ignored or something else. There's no way I could carry on an intelligent conversation on some of the topics I'm interested in my ward. And this isn't just the ward I'm living in now. It was a previous ward and the ward previous to that. It's just wherever I've been, it's been very difficult to find people with common interests. And this way I've got, you know, a couple hundred friends that I can talk to on the topics that I'm interested in. I've been writing down a few notes over the last couple of weeks trying to say something intelligent today. Here's a couple other ideas that have come up, some mentioned by some other people, but some of my own. This is also a good chance to talk about topics that aren't specifically related to the gospel. We had a good discussion on music, rock music in particular, over the last couple of weeks. We can talk about rock music with people who share our common beliefs, our common morals.
Sometimes don't you wonder
about? Yeah, a few people I wonder about. But I think we came to consensus that Led Zeppelin wasn't that bad, didn't we? But where else could you talk about rock music with a group of people who share your common beliefs? You know, where else are you going to find a group of people like that you can carry on these types of conversations? Also, let's get a wider perspective. We're talking to people all over the world. Of course, most of the people on the lists that we're associated with are in the United States. There's one guy from Australia that's recently joined our group, and we've got a lot of good comments from him. We're getting a wider perspective on the gospel and gospel-related topics. It's broadened my horizons, to use an overworked phrase. To hear some more opinions, to hear from some more people. And I've learned an awful lot and expanded my own opinions. Have you ever wanted a copy of a talk given by somebody? Have you ever wanted the answer to a certain gospel question? Have you ever wondered, did Brigham Young really say such and such? Well, post a question like that out to the net, and you'll have an answer pretty quickly. We started talking about this Boyd K. Packer talk a couple weeks ago as soon as it hit the newspaper, and guess what? Well, we now have the text of that talk because somebody obtained that talk and typed it in and posted it, and we now all have the text of that talk. And we've been busy pulling it apart and nitpicking and critiquing it ever since.
Well, and also news articles. Like you put in the article from the Tribune about the talk.
Yeah, on occasion, if I have the time, then when I see a good article in the Tribune, then if it's short, I'll type it in. If it's long, I'll see if I can dig up a scanner somewhere and scan it in and post the text. Again, quite a few of the people live in the Salt Lake area along the Wasatch Front, and they may have access to these sorts of articles that appear in the newspaper, but quite often they're not. Somebody in Australia is not going to have access to the Salt Lake Tribune. And so we can all provide help to each other to, you know, news, things that are going on, resource for information. Where can I find information on such and such? And it's been very helpful. Let me pass the mic here.
Okay. Thank you, Paul. Hi, my name is Laurie DePadova. And this has just been so wonderful for us to see each other. I remember last summer coming to Sunstone, meeting some Mormon L people, and it was just like meeting old friends. I had been on Mormon L since, you know, my husband just curses the day I discovered email. He really does. And now with two teenage kids in the house, you know, it's a real fight for the phone line. I think Arda has that that fight too sometime. But it is addicting. I was tempted to say I want to respond to the previous messages. That's what we do. We respond to the previous messages. And the thing that's wonderful is I don't have to do it right when the person says it. I can just, if someone says something, and occasionally someone has said something that I know I want to say something, but I just don't want to get tied up at saying it right then, I can just pretend like I haven't been reading and then come on and say, for 2 or 3 weeks, and then come on and say, oh, I've been neglecting my email, and I'd like to respond to something so-and-so said on July, 1st. And meanwhile, I have been thinking about it, see, but people think that I had just read it and responded. So anyway, you can do that. Now you know. Now you know. But really, it has just been such a delightful and needful experience. And I was listening to the comments. What keeps surfacing for me is the term need, that we need, as individuals, as members of the church, we need to be heard. And we need to listen. We need to share. We need to explore. Maybe it's because sometimes when I make a comment in Sunday school or Relief Society, I feel like something's being engraved in stone somewhere. There's a permanent impression being made of me because of what I've just said, Whereas on Mormonnel, it doesn't matter. These aren't people who are going to be home teaching me or giving me temple recommend interviews or whatever. But I can explore things with them. I can change my mind. I can more readily. And plus, you have more time. You're on the mail list every day of the week. Sunday school is only 45 minutes a week. That's a very limited time for dialogue with people and for sharing. So the ability and the freedom to really explore. And Stacy's right. You get really different perspectives, and I have treasured that. When I first posted, I had Brent's fears, and so it was on a safe topic. Someone, I think Gordon Banks, said they were discussing vegetarianism and the word of wisdom. So he said a vegetarian should answer this. So there I was. I could answer that. I felt like I'd been invited, so it made it easier. But when we got into gender issues, it was heartening to see that I was taken seriously by predominantly men on the list who were vocal. And that was encouraging. And I'm sure I'm taken more seriously in my stake than I realized. But, they would take my arguments and dissect them and do, even when they vehemently disagreed, they were taking them seriously, and that was a real plus. So, and sometimes there are some off the wall kinds of things. And of course, people look at some of us as being off the wall, but that's broadening. And it, I would tell Tess, and look at this, look at the diversity. This is Mormonnel, and look at what a wide variety of viewpoint. And I'm thinking, maybe people in the ward aren't as unidimensional as I have been thinking. Maybe there is a real force for conformity or for conforming action as we walk into the ward, but when we get out, we cut loose or something mentally. I don't know, but it may help me appreciate the wide diversity of perspectives. One thing that I've appreciated is there are people, there's 242 people, I think, on the Mormon mail list. There are people who do not read dialogue, would never subscribe to Sunstone, wouldn't be caught dead with Exponent 2, yet they read and respond to what we, what has been said, and that has been, and if anyone thinks, please don't think that it's a liberal perspective that dominates on the Mormon mail list. That's not true at all. It's a wide variety. There are many more conservative members who are quite strong in their views and tenaciously hold to them. And what's been interesting is to see some will share some of their life experiences. And it's been very moving to see people share their life experiences, their life situations, and understand more of what's behind where they're coming from. So when I come here and see the faces behind the BitNet address, you know, it's really a heartwarming experience. And I've wondered if any of us look to any of the others like we thought we were, like, I mean, did we predict that each other would look like this or what? Oh, that's true. We got to get back. We have to get back to the beards discussion. Okay.
My name's John Hurd, and I represent on this panel what I think is probably the largest single group on the network, and that is the lurkers, the people that mostly listen and don't post at all, if any. And I think my experience probably is representative of most people. It's just taking me a longer time. I think my experience was I tuned into the list, was overwhelmed by the number of messages, and at my first glance, it looked like there were some kooks on there, the John Birchers and some esoteric subjects that I wasn't particularly interested in, and I sort of dropped out for a little while, but there was something that sort of drew me back, and the more time I spent on the list, the more familiar I became with some of the people, their personalities seemed to emerge, and I seemed to start gaining some appreciation, more and more appreciation for the people on the list. And I got into, I guess, what I named, at least to myself, the Amen syndrome. I started saying, yeah, I really agree with that, but I didn't do anything about it. And I feel relatively comfortable as a lurker. To me, it's sort of, as been mentioned before, a 365-day sunstone session that you can just pick up on all kinds of topics and learn about them and understand. But I think you get pulled into it a little bit, too. I've actually started responding to a few times myself, and it really is addictive. I've mentioned that I was representative of the largest group. I think I'm also representative of one of the smallest groups on the list, and that is that I'm not in academia, I'm not in government, and I'm not with a computer company, which means I need to find a way to access it that's not as easy as some of these other areas. And there are ways to do that, and I'd be happy. I currently use CompuServe as my entry point to it.
So what are your CompuServe bills?
CompuServe can be very expensive because they tend to charge, or if you're not, if you don't set it up right, they charge by the message, and there can be up to 100 messages a day. There have been bills $100 a month on it. I've found out since that in Colorado, and I think in most states, there are independent organizations that will allow you to tap into the Internet for much less money, fairly small amount of money. And so it is possible, and I'm in the process right now of transferring over to that type of a service. So it really is open to everybody. So at this point, I guess I'll revert back to my persona and lurk.
That's been a very helpful introduction. We've also got some additional members of the of Mormon-El and maybe other networks. And could we do a little intro? Any way to say any thoughts you want to add? Do you want to say anything?
Sure, we can.
That's right.
I know that Mormon-El is addictive, too. I'm Jeff Turley, and I'm at BYU. I was one of the very first, I think, involved with Mormon-El. You know, for me, the great thing about this is, in addition to everything that they've said, you make friends. I mean, I've met a lot of really neat people that I wouldn't have met. And we get together. And it's not like we only like each other when we're exchanging electrons. We also, you know, enjoy each other's company, and several of us that live around here do get together. And Kurt here, Kurt Conklin, turns out he was in my ward. You know, I may not have ever seen that certain side of Kurt had I not, you know, done that. So even your next door neighbors might have a side that you wouldn't have known about. So, you know, I see Arda Johnson. She shows up from Calgary, and we give each other a hug. We've never met. But so anyway, for me, that's, I think, the best part of it.
I'm Jerry Hurd. John forgot to mention that we have become the ward people who are the resource for the latest news, because on Mormonnel we pick up the speeches like the Boyd K. Packer speech and the news items that that Carl Best puts on the thing. And so we have people that greet us at the door saying, "What's the latest?"
I wanted to say there is sometimes a downside to this, besides the addictive portions of it. Occasionally we'll have something called flame fests or firestorms, and this is when, this is generally a self-policing group, and it usually works very well when, we kind of all know that name-calling is inappropriate, and those of us who've had maybe a wider access to other mailing lists and other bulletin boards realize that at our worst we have never even come close to some of the awful ways that people treat one another on some of the non-LDS lists with just outright rudeness and vulgarity and so forth. We've never had, have we had any vulgarity? There was that one private post that that they thought was private that was made public. They sent, it's important to check where the mail is actually going to go. That was actually cute, though. I like that. But it does, as one who is involved in controversial topics, there are a couple of things that I think are important to note. Because of time constraints, people tend to zero in on topics that they are particularly interested in, and this tends to create kind of a monolithic image of them. Most people think that I'm not interested in the topics that don't have anything to do with gender issues. I am, but I feel like I use up my allotted bandwidth dealing with the topics that I find most compelling. Doesn't mean that I'm not interested in genealogical software, although, well, but or endless discussions of this and that, you know. But one of the things that occasionally happens is that people will say, "Well, this topic has already been discussed to death, and I'm sick of reading about thus and so and thus and so." And then we'll have a whole discussion of whether or not it's appropriate to tell people that they can't talk about a particular topic. You get all these kind of sub-swirling eddies of conversation about that sort of thing, and you end up having a whole lot more messages clogging the arteries of communication than if people had just not tried to censor other people's thinking and speaking. And occasionally things do get rough, and people will chime in and say, "You know, I think you were out of line doing this," or, and sometimes people sign off in a huff and then repent later on and come back. And
one fellow asserted his priesthood authority and chastised you.
Oh, this is true too, and it's interesting. You know, is it possible to do that electronically? Well, it does raise a lot of theological questions for me. But on the other hand, one of the nice things is that when there have been serious disagreements, most people have tended to go private. And I know that there have been people that I have had major public slugfests. And because we don't like being at odds with one another, we'll send each other private mail and say, "Look, this is, you know, say things to each other and try to work things out and spare the net any further bloodletting." And occasionally I've even called people when it seemed like it was important to actually say, "Hey, I'm a human being with, you know, I have a voice that's a human, real, physical voice," and to talk to people. I've met a number, I've verbally met people that way. I know what their voices sound like, even if I still haven't had a chance to see them. And that's been very important, because even one of those wild types up in Alaska, we have a couple of guys up in Alaska, and who seem to be very conservative. Maybe it's the air or something. And there was this one fellow, and we really, really disagreed. This is not the most prolific person from Alaska. And he and I exchanged a few notes on a particular topic, and lo and behold, we really weren't that far apart at all. In fact, we were pretty much in complete agreement, and it ended up being more or less a semantic misunderstanding. And that's been very important. The nicest thing for me, however, was to get private messages from various people supporting me when I felt like I was being dumped on. That's been very nice. And also to hear from some of the more lurky types, and I remember getting a message from one guy who'd been on one of the lists for a long time, and he may have posted this publicly, saying, and he had been so conservative and so vehemently opposed to anything even vaguely smacking of feminism or whatever, and to have him come on and say, this is the way I was, but actually discussing these issues with people, I still don't agree with everything that they say, but you know, he's moved along the continuum away from what I perceived at, you know, as a very rigid view of the way men and women are, to actually understanding and feeling compassionate towards people that, you know, years ago when he first started on, he wasn't like that.
Lori, did you have a follow-up comment or thought about attitude change and... Okay, I'll get it over to you. When I first got on, it was last July, I think, and not this July, but last July, and I think that was a golden time of discussion of gender issues. There was a tremendous, I don't know when it occurred, maybe it was into the fall, but there was a point where I had crushes on Lori and Lynn and Arda because they were so Christian in the way they were dealing with the discussion, and it was such a passionate and heated discussion about gender issues, and I'd like to get Lori's reaction to that whole experience.
Thank you. Well, yes, there is attitude change. I did poll some people privately and ask, and I received a couple responses that say, look, it seems like to me that people just are entrenched in their viewpoint and they just want to present that viewpoint, and that, but by the majority said that they have noticed in themselves and others really profound and sensitive changes. Not that everyone comes to complete agreement, and they may not agree with some parts of Mormon feminism or whatever, but they expressed greater appreciation for the situation of women in the church. Several said, if I'm ever called to be a top priesthood leader, the women aren't going to know what hit because of the way we handle this differently and that and so forth. And it's just been a very sweet, sweet experience to notice this attitude change. I didn't want to make that judgment that people would change their attitudes, but people did report that. I want to say that I really appreciate Brent's using the metaphor of the email first ward, because I think that I don't know how many people on what the situation, we don't know the situations of people in this room, much less situations of people on the list, but I think that there may be some that are in a lot of pain and that are on, feel very marginal, and that to be and you're right, there are times when, you know, we don't know people's callings unless there's someone who always reminds us that he is on the high council, and therefore, you know, we should, you know, listen carefully to, no, but aside from those times, we don't know what people's callings are, except for ward clerks. It has been, I think, a way to reach out to people and to let people venture in. And maybe for the only time in their current church experience, it may be that people on Mormonel or LDSL are the only LDS people that they're having a feeling of acceptance from. I really think that has happened more than once. To be quite candid, and if people in pain can feel a degree of acceptance by the church, by Mormons, by venturing on the network, then I think that the electronic mail has served the church very well.
Any other Mormoners in the audience want to say hello, Simon, or any questions?
Well, I'm Simon Clift, and in Waterloo, Ontario, I must admit our university really couldn't care less about Mormon history. It's a bit of a desert when it comes to information, and one of the things that I have really appreciated about being on the network is the access to people who are thoroughly knowledgeable in LDS history and some who aren't. And it has been, for me, a very broadening experience. I'd like to emphasize just how much I appreciate being able to ask these questions and get these answers. Now that I've come to my first Sunstone, I realize how much it is like being at Sunstone all day. And I listen to these people giving talks, telling about how they were a recently returned missionary with a very simple view of the world, and over 20 years they've changed. Well, Net's done it to me in about three. So I think it provides a forum for the church that you're never going to find in other places, in that you can talk to people from broad geographic regions, whereas most of the communication in the church outside of the ward tends to go up and, well, mostly down, but occasionally up and down, fairly well-defined channels, and it's very difficult to find out how people are feeling about certain issues, and how certain church programs, how certain aspects of the way the church is dealing with its membership are affecting people in different areas. And to me, that's been one of the greatest benefits of the Net, is just being able to communicate with these people that I otherwise wouldn't have the chance to.
Okay, thank you, Simon.
Yes.
I would just add to that. I think these groups are probably the most profoundly uncorrelated thing happening in all of Mormonism.
That's a very good point. We live in Louisville, Colorado, my family, and virtually the whole family is in the ward choir. And it's a very democratic ward choir. We complain if we don't like the music. We suggest going faster. It's such an anomaly to have something like this in a Mormon environment where you are unmoderated, where you have to trust each other to be to behave and so forth. It's a neat experience. We did a canvas of the membership, and I think there are three anonymous accounts. Is that right? It seems like several months ago there were three anonymous accounts. There, you know, lots of names, and then there are these three anonymous ones that makes you wonder who's listening. But by the way, I did start keeping copies of my postings. I mean, just for protection. I'm sure I'm not that important to anybody, but here.
My name is Gideon Burton, and I wanted to say how Mormonel has changed my life and that I know it's true. No, seriously, it has changed my life in terms of it's directly responsible for me starting a very big enterprise. This fall we're starting a new periodical called Mormon Review, and it's a review of books, movies, television, music, and events from Mormon perspectives. And guess where I got the idea that there really were a lot of people out there with such perspectives from Mormon Review, from Mormonel. On Mormonel, people are always talking about books. They're always coming up. There's always that about monthly, what's your favorite book list, comes out and people discuss it. People talk about the movies they like. There's the R rating discussion that comes up with some regularity. And anyway, by reading a lot of these reviews, I realized there was a lot of popular interest. At least I believe that Mormonel is somewhat representative of the democratic nature of the church, perhaps skewed a little bit, but anyway, I realized there was a lot of interest in discussing movies and popular media and books from a Mormon perspective, and so we've gone gung-ho with it, and I encourage you all to subscribe, and you must, and I have information to give all of you, but in any case, Mormonel was really a large part responsible for that, and all I had to do was say, hey, I'm interested in someone, has anyone read Embraced by the Light, would like to do a review of that, and several people write in, and off of Mormonel, Danny, what's his name, is in the Navy, Danny Clark, he's doing a review for us of Secret Ceremonies, he just emailed to me, so it's been really fun, and it's productive, and I was just really encouraged by it, and I started believing that a lot more people were interested in these issues than I ever thought. I thought I had this private passion for Mormon literature, and there were about six others of us in the universe, but it turned out that a lot of people were very well read in such diverse areas, and they're volunteering to do reviews in different areas, and it just proved really important for me.
Good. Thank you. Arda, you're next.
My name's Arda Johnson. I live in Alberta, and I read Mormonel. I'm like everyone else. I think everyone can remember their first email posting because it takes so long to lurk before you dare do that. And the first thing I did was answer and tell somebody where they could find the music that would go with the Book of Mormon's, anyway, with this banjo song. I didn't know where to find it. But I waited about 3 days to see if somebody was going to argue with me. And I also want to let you know I let all the kids read, and my husband reads, but he only read peripherally until I went away on my holiday, and I asked him to please just keep the messages down by deleting them. But when I came back from my holidays, he'd saved 100 messages, and now when I come home from work, he says, let's go take the dinner down and read Mormon L while we eat.
Boy, that's romantic. Good good job, Kelvin. That's good. I did want to... a few thoughts I've got to follow up on some of this stuff. As you know, the microcomputers and faxes, things like that, have turned Eastern Europe and Soviet Union into open, relatively open societies. That's oversimplifying, of course, but there is definitely a democratizing influence when knowledge gets disseminated. And that includes people out of the hinterlands in Ontario or come sit. We'll get right to you. But the same principle, I think, holds true when it comes to church things. And so when I'm the first on my block in my ward to get a story about the current troubles at BYU or something, you know, something interesting that I am able to read, a Larry King interview, whatever, it's good for me to have that information, regardless of my ideological, you know, beliefs or anything like that. It's just good to have that information out. There are secondary and tertiary recipients of Mormonel. There are families, there are wards, there are friends that get past copies of these postings. It's incredible how far these things go. I send mine out to California and everywhere that I've got friends that might have interest. I'll send an occasional posting out. And so I wanted to just kind of emphasize that the value of that information getting out. I do think it's a very potent form of dialogue, and dialogue is a very scary thing. It's, first of all, it takes a real commitment. I don't have the stomach for it, as well as some of the members here. Lynn is just an endlessly patient person who will engage in true dialogue, point by point dialogue, with people of very different views. I'm not like that. If I get too far apart from somebody, I'll usually just not bother saying anything. And so it does take a certain commitment to just joining in that debate. There's a magazine called Dialogue. I think that the Mormon L and other electronic forums really try to practice that commitment to open exchange of information. A couple other things. My personality and my preference is not towards arguing about particulars of doctrine as much as listening to people's stories. Given a choice between doctrinal exposition and listen to somebody's life experience, or I'll always pick the story. And on Mormonel and other forums, you do have a choice. You have some of both, and it really is an enriching experience. And I've collected posts. I'm terrible because I read these things and I say I can't get, you know, I don't want to just throw that away. And so I've got about 10 meg worth of postings. It's terrible, and I don't know what to do with them. Now that I've gotten my 10 meg of a year's worth of postings, I'm not sure what to do. But if anybody wants it, come talk to me. I'll give you my the best of or something. I did also want to mention there is a phenomenon of you post, and then absolutely nobody says anything about it. I think of it as a black hole. I'm convinced that and I was talking to Chuck Hammaker. Is that his name? Yes, Chuck posted something about something slightly controversial, and then he got no answer. And it was 2 or 3 days, and I posted him privately, and he said, "Brent, nobody's said a darn thing about this." And I thought, "Oh gosh, now I know I'm not the only one that goes through that anxiety of saying, did anybody read this? Did anybody get it?" It is a dialogue. There are people who provoke and have a gift for
for generating a response. I'm convinced that other times things that I post, the people who agree with me say, yeah. And then the people who disagree with said, oh, that guy's out to lunch, but it's not worth responding to. And so there is that phenomenon experience. Perry, question.
Yeah, I was wondering,
well, I will say that I have learned...
you want to come? You want to say hi?
Oh, I'll say my bit.
Okay. I'm sorry, I know this wasn't your intent, but I have learned by Mormonell how to contact Bill Clinton. And there are, you know, in other words, we share this information about how to send email to the White House, et cetera, et cetera. I know that's not the intent of your message, but there is a pretty good amount of calling the bluffs. I mean, if you're up with a fairly shaky point to make, it'll get a point. Yeah, it'll get noticed, and you will get called for it.
Some of the things Brent said, and a little bit in response to your question, there's not a whole lot of discussion of politics purely separate, I guess, from religion. Where politics and religion connect, there are discussions. But I think one of the virtues of Mormonell, and one of the way that it has a democratizing effect, and one of the way that it serves the greater dissemination of knowledge, is that if you use a cliche about the church, you will get nailed by somebody on Mormonell who says, no, it's not true that this practice has been the same since the dawn of time, or no, it is not the case that scripture really means that. And I think that has had a virtue because we all tend to have things that we're pretty sure are really set in cement. And if you use them and you use them unwisely, someone will call you on it, not necessarily in a nasty way, but I think it forces all of us to think a little bit more clearly about what we're sure is absolutely so and about the way we speak. And I think that's a virtue for everybody.
Collectively, you have a tremendous amount of intelligence there. Yes, one question, and then we'll go to Michael. Yes. Sure.
This doesn't exactly address your question, but the cheapest way I know of to get involved that's available everywhere is through MCI Mail, which offers electronic mail as a service. For $35 a year, you can receive all the email you want from all the lists you want to sign up to. That's very cheap. They charge you a fair bit per message that you want to send out, but it's not that expensive. But that's a real good deal.
That's a great way to lurk with MCI mail. I would say, this is what I would say in a nutshell, if you're concerned about the technical side here, go to university or state college or someplace near where you live, go to the academic computing office or something and say, hey, this is what I want to do, and have them tell you to go away or something, but express your problem to an academic institution or a technical place like that, and see if you can get an account at a university, see if you can get an account. There are a lot of research, and there are ways to get accounts at universities other than just being a faculty or staff or student that might be a way to do it. I personally think you need a certain amount of hand-holding just to get started, and go find somebody. In other words, my main advice is go find a body that would help you who is more knowledgeable than you. That's probably the best thing that you could do. Okay, now... we've had come a little late a surprise panelist, and Michael Allen is the originator, co-founder of Mormonell, and he's had a conflict, but I'm glad he's been able to come today, and let's get a few minutes from him.
It's delightful to walk in here and hear people talking about my little project. And I'm seeing a lot of, it's funny, I've been to Sunstone often in the past. I'm one of those this year, who some of you read in the paper, one of the BYU faculty who is not mentioned on the program, but participating anyway. I'm in the history department at BYU, and Brent, having a good sense of the times when he invited me to do this, offered his own initiative to have me as a panelist unannounced, which my chairman will appreciate. How many of you here are on Mormonell? I'm just curious. It's or LDSnet. It's funny. I'm walking around now. I've been at Sunstone for several years, but now I recognize more names than I do faces. I'm walking around looking at chest level and saying, "Oh, there's Simon Clift. There's Karen Clift. I know them, but I've never met them before." Mormonell. Just a little bit of background on why we started it. And a couple of reactions from people. And I don't want to, if I start repeating things that have been said, you know, just excommunicate me. It was started about 2 years ago at BYU, and it grew out of the experience that a couple of us had had in other kinds of academic, electronic academic forums in our professional fields. And we thought, and this is before we knew that the other network even existed, and I think we stepped on a few toes initially. We didn't mean to. But we thought, wouldn't it be nice to have something like this for Mormon studies? And so we arranged with the BYU computer gurus to start it up and sent out announcements to the major LDS-oriented publications, Dialogue, Sunstone, BYU Today, and the Alumni Magazine, or I guess that is BYU Today, and all of the places that we could get the word out. Subscriptions started trickling in, and now we've got 200-plus actual addresses that things are sent out to. As Brent was indicating, they actually go a lot more places than that, but about 200 addresses. The discussions initially centered on, well, we initially had about 35 subscribers or something like that, and it was there would be a couple of messages a day about a variety of things. Now there are 50 to 75, something like that. I have to, well, it's actually, there's a default limit on the program. It will only send out 50 a day, and I have to go in and physically administer an electronic laxative in order for it to actually allow more than 50 out. And so if I forget to do that in any day, I mean, nobody, no bells ring. It's just that only 50 messages go out, and then at 12 o'clock and 1 second the following morning, there's a flood of messages that goes out. But I try to remember to do that. Initially, the list was moderated. That is, I received every message before it was ever seen by anyone else, and I cleared it. It gave me great power and a certain amount of electronic arrogance to be passing judgment on all of these things. It turned out, that though, there was very little need for that. My own views on what's appropriate in a discussion are so open that I found very little that I could object to. What we were mostly looking out for was open, explicit discussion of temple ceremonies. We didn't think that would be too appropriate, especially on the BYU mainframe. And personal nastiness, attacks on people's, on people rather than on their ideas. And there were a few cases where I had to actually write back to someone and say, you really want to say this? And almost invariably with one exception, they would write back with gratitude. Thank you for catching that. What an idiot I was. I didn't really mean to say that. Would you please edit it out? And then the messages would go through much kinder and gentler. There was one case where a person had written in response to, there are, as Brent said, people who tend to provoke strong reactions. One person who had written in saying about another person that he, you know, this he was just, you know, stupid ass, I think had been the word, something like that. And I wrote back to him and said, are you sure that's what you want to say? And his response was, well, you know, I really do think he's a stupid ass. But if you don't want that to go out on the on the forum, go ahead and delete it. But he left it in my hands. He wasn't about to retract his opinion. But I'm sure you've gotten from these very good panelists some idea of what happens on this. I wanted to just share a couple of things, and then I'll leave the rest of the time for more of this panel discussion. A few months ago, this was in March, I, in anticipation of a radio interview I was doing, I asked for opinions, for people to respond to me personally. Some did it publicly, but most of the messages came to me privately, to respond what Mormonel and similar lists had meant to them, what niche it had. Obviously, this does fill a gap in people's lives. There wouldn't be this kind of interest. And if nothing else, it fills a gap in people's time. Judging from the number and volume of, there are people who, either have more time than I do or have the ability. I've concluded that Lynn has the ability to write about 10 times as fast as I do, because I know she's very busy, and yet she consistently comes out with these well thought out, brilliant, lengthy responses, and it's embarrassing. No, I mean to us, not to you. But here's what one person wrote. This is from somebody in California. I have found Mormonel helpful in the past few months when I've been able to use insight gained from the list when I had the occasion to substitute teach in Gospel Doctrine and High Priest Group. In Gospel Doctrine, I was able to use various facts about Joseph Smith that I had garnered from the list over the past year to liven up the lesson. Many came up to me afterward and said they learned something new about church history that was not in the DNC. Last Sunday, I taught High Priest Group the lesson on teaching your children to be chaste, and there had been a long discussion of this on Mormonel. Needless to say, I had plenty of topics for discussion from the past month's posts on the same subject. We discussed inappropriate object lessons and how do we teach our children to be chaste and safe. I used the manual very little, but we had one of the better discussions in the past year in High Priest. So I don't know if the curriculum people would appreciate that very much. I also enjoy Mormonel for the opportunity to talk about things that are not related to our salvation, but are church-related and just fun to talk about. From another, just a couple of these are of particular interest. This is from somebody who is living in the San Francisco Bay Area, but that I had known in Berkeley when I was a student there, and you know him, Jeff, but I will leave his name out of it. He said, my own reaction to Mormonel has been almost uniformly positive. We moved down to the South Bay from Berkeley nearly 2 years ago, and it was really a depressing experience. In Berkeley, I was used to associating with a broad range of really talented, intelligent people, and he named some of them, who were not afraid to think about the gospel. We were able to talk about things like women and the priesthood, polygamy, the Mountain Meadows Massacre, the implausibility of the flood, and Mormonism and Marxism in gospel doctrine class or priesthood meetings, openly admit our doubts and areas of ignorance or concern, and still be considered faithful Latter-day Saints. I know some people felt that the discussions in the Berkeley ward were unedifying and heretical. We even had one missionary write a letter to the mission president complaining that I was teaching false doctrine in gospel doctrine class. But with few exceptions, I personally left church every week feeling better about being a Latter-day Saint. And he goes on saying that when they moved to this new area they moved to, they felt out of it because there was no opportunity for that. He says, I avoid gospel doctrine class and the ward generally whenever I can get away with it. Unable to air some of my feelings and beliefs for fear of getting into a useless argument. Mormonel, however, has helped restore a lot of what I had felt in Berkeley. I don't want or expect total agreement on every issue. What I do want is an environment where I can feel comfortable with my understanding of Mormonism, where I can say what I feel without fear of reprisal, where I can air my doubts and uncertainties and know that others share them. I'm looking for my place within the society of the church. Mormonel has helped provide me with that. And there's just one other one I wanted to read. Well, this is one person said that Mormonel had, or the people on the list, have become like an extended ward. There's a sense of community. If I ever went to Pullman, I would look up Terry Day and feel like meeting an old friend. Except you'd probably want to talk about sex. Terry Day, this is a fellow, some of you know him, that's why I can mention his name. He managed to bring sex into every topic, and it was always fun to see what he had to say. Always tastefully. The last comment, this is somebody else from California who says, this forum is the best thing since they started the block meeting schedule. I like that one. Anyway, it's been something that we started out a couple of years ago kind of as an experiment. It's no longer being moderated actively. I'm still officially the list owner, which means I still have great powers. But it's not so much a matter of passing judgment on things that get posted now as it is maintaining the list and adding and dropping people if can't manage to do it themselves. And so if any of you incidentally have an email account and want to be added and don't know how to do it, you can give me your name and address and I can do that for you. And David can do the same thing for the LDS net. It's fun. And it's the kind of thing where you're able to expand your circle of acquaintances and find that you're in daily the kind of discussion that you might have in a corner of the Hilton during this 1 week of Sunstone, and you have it going nonstop.
Any other comments? We really have neglected questions. Are there any other questions from the group that you'd like to address? Comments from the panelists. David, did we get enough of a chance to differentiate Mormonel from LDSnet? Do you want to make another comment about that, how you feel about
My feeling is that there is no formal distinction, but informal distinctions have grown up over time. I think that LDSnet is now characterized as sort of a kinder, gentler forum where conservatives are more welcome, where provocative topics are less likely to occur, but they do.
And if they do occur, people are told to take them to Mormonel.
Yes. And for example, there's who is it who posts the Sunday school stuff every week? So someone posts all the stuff about next week's Sunday school lesson every week, so that you have the class discussion, the scriptures that are going to be studied, and the questions out of the manual, and someone else posts a chapter from the Book of Mormon every week. These are the sorts of things that happen on LDSnet that don't happen on Mormonel. on the other hand, yes, there's someone who posts pretty detailed conference summaries within a few days after general conference every 6 months. But I think we have just as open a forum. We've had people come out on the list in the last couple of weeks. We've learned that someone has AIDS on the list recently. It's very, very open, good discussion.
We've had coming outs on, we've had really fascinating personal narratives, including coming out. A person confessed their sexual orientation on the net. It was a fascinating personal story. And so these are some of the things that I think are meaningful to the participants. And I'll bet, if I haven't talked to David about this, but I'll bet David feels a little funny about being cast as the more conservative net, because as the owner, as the moderator or whatever, the list owner, I'm sure that he would welcome a wide diversity of input into his net as well. So the first three nets on the handout, Mormonel, LDSnet, and Mormant, are the primary lists available. And we haven't talked about Mormant, but it's an antiquities net. Yes? Is there an error?
The question is, what is Uncommon Saints? I can't say too much about it. I've been subscribed for about a month, and the volume has been, maybe 10 messages during that month, and mostly just telling us that the main participants are out of town, and things will pick up later. so I can't really say too much about it.
A lot of people I know belong to more than one. I think there's a lot of cross-subscribing between LDSnet and Mormonel in particular, and I know it's some people who are on one or the other also who have one of these commercial services like America Online or CompuServe also are involved in the religion forum there.
Yeah, I think probably half of LDSnet has about 150 subscribers, and I think at least half of them are also on Mormonel.
More
Yeah. Well, this way you can attend more than one more at the same time.
Any other questions?
What would you say are the limits of Mormonel? I mean, you mentioned earlier the black hole problem of typing something in and it's not answered. I think sometimes I personally am frustrated where I've presented something that I've really put a lot of time into and I do get response. But it's on someone picks one little isolated point and you get those currents and eddies that you were talking about. But they didn't address the thing as a whole, At a forum like this, if you make a big speech, someone tries to respond to what you said, but I guess it's just a matter of the electronic forum.
Yes, the dynamics of an electronic forum are different from a one-to-one conversation. They're different from a phone call. They have their own set of rules. and limitations, obviously. Just for information, this summer I taught a class, a graduate class in Ed Psych, where we did email. Instead of written reactions to papers, I got everybody on, with the exception of one stubborn class member, I got everybody else on the on list and got them all talking to each other on the just via electronic mail. And I don't know if this is causally related, but it was the liveliest class that I've taught for about 2 years in that subject. And I don't know if there was a relationship there, but I do think that they learned something from the interaction that goes on. And so the rules are different, and it's more, it's a less formal way than typical letters or writing. It's more formal than one-to-one call, you know, talking or phone calls, but it's somewhere in between there. It's a fascinating Netherland.
And, too, sometimes just the mood of the lists will be such that, you know, if people have been talking about Led Zeppelin, there are some topics that people are not going to necessarily want to discuss. And if you really feel strongly about something and you feel like your main point has been overlooked in favor of the little backwaters and eddies and so forth, post again. Say the same thing again and say, I want some feedback. And, you know, somebody will say, well, I was going to, but I didn't, you know. There have been a number of people who have done that. One of the things that I think, some of the complaints is when people feel like they would like to participate, but maybe they're intimidated by the dominant voices, and there are dominant voices. Some people are deliberate lurkers, and they enjoy seeing the give and take, and other people just feel like that they're entering something that they're just not prepared for, and they feel like they're going to be crushed. And I don't know exactly what to do about that. There have been, I don't know, what is the turnover rate about?
I think about out of the 150 on LDSNet, probably half have been there 6 months or less. The turnover rate is really quite high. There's a core of people, maybe 10 or 15 have been there the whole, you know, 5 years. But a lot of people sign on, watch for a day or a week, and they say, this is not for me, I'm getting off.
Mm-hmm. Okay, one more question, then we'll leave. Come on up. Get into the mic.
Here, brother.
I lurk more than I post. I do enjoy reading posts on the net, but I have severe time constraints, and I just wonder what people do to cope with the volume of the list. I really hate to blip out. I posted something that I regret about blipping out certain individuals. But I have done it topically, and then I'll find out later on, I'll read some other post, and find out that I missed a really important thread that I really wish I would have read, or there'll be something that's in a great big old thread that a lot of people are posting on, but there was one discussion that sparked that whole thread that was the key to it all, and I've missed that one. I've blipped that out. So what is a way to deal with the volume of the list?
There's no easy answer, partly because after a time, as you know, subject headers cease to bear any relationship to the content of the, you know, it's like when you get in a discussion with somebody and you start talking about automobiles, and before you know it, you're talking about politics, and before you know it, you're talking about a movie, and before you something else, all under, you know, this discussion started out on one thing. This happens a lot, so it's hard to track things that way. You talked about blipping out. I've occasionally been asked as the list owner to use my great powers to blip out certain individuals. The most recent request came about 3 days ago to blip someone out. I must say, in this case, it was very tempting, given the nature of the things that were being said. But I didn't do it. No, I didn't. But I mean, what's the use of having great powers if you don't use them now and then? I think this is what... there are a couple of options that some people are using now on Mormon-L. I don't know if this is available on LDSNet. I don't think it is because it's a different kind of program. One is we are now set up so that you can use an index. There, instead of getting these 50 or 70 or 80 sometimes messages a day, you can receive once a day, just after midnight, an index automatically prepared that has a listing of the previous day's messages, who sent the message, how long it is, and the subject header. And then it has instructions at the end telling you how to call up just those messages you want to see. So if you're following only one thread, you can just retrieve those messages that are relevant to that. Another way is there's now also a digest option that we have where instead of getting each message at the end of the day, you get one big message. I mean, it is pretty big, 4,000 to 5,000 lines. One big message that has all of the previous day's messages so that you don't have to wade through a sea of individual messages. You can scan through one. And it has a nice summary at the beginning of what topics have been discussed that day and how many messages there were on each of those topics. And that's one way that some people are able to cut down on the time involved through either getting the digest or the index. There's not really much other... I don't know.
Yeah, I've been thinking about starting up a best of list, but the time involved in doing it sort of kept me from doing it.
I felt for many months that I would be willing to pay money for somebody to help me digest some of the material.
Okay. I guess what it boils down to is, scanning quickly. I don't dare, you know, as Lee pointed out, sometimes you find out if you kill something without reading it because of the subject line. You know, they've had things... logical software that have actually been about women in priesthood, which is kind of interesting to me. And so I have to look through things, but I can do it really fast. And some people have better, more sophisticated mail reading programs than others. But I do go through things, and there are some people that I must confess I rarely read. I guess the most annoying thing for me is when people will quote somebody's previous message in its entirety, and then at the very bottom will say, I really agree with this. You know, so you've waded through the same message again only to get to this, you know, there's nothing at the end. The only thing to do is just go quickly. And I usually try to save messages that I...
Get a fast mode?
Yeah.
What is a very good mail reading software?
That would probably just depend on what you've got, what's machines and stuff you've got.
You probably depend on the mainframe or the, you know, that batch or whatever you're connected to. It depends on what you're connected to.
There are also a few people on the list, on both lists, who have a reputation for having a good collection of the best of the past posts. And if you find, Lee, in your case, if you find there's something that turns out to be a more interesting discussion than you thought and you missed the beginning of it, you can... usually contact one of four or five people and they'll have it and be able to send it to you. Also, again, I don't know if this is LDSnet archived.
Yes.
They're both of these lists that we're talking about here are automatically archived and you can go through archive. Now, that can be sometimes pretty, these are huge files, but you can go through the archives and see what's there. Right now, this would comprise a monumentally huge file.
We have to end, but I do want to say that the topics go around and go around. The same arguments and issues come up, but usually somebody has a different perspective and something new to add, new insights. I know that my position on certain topics have changed over the years because of new information that's come my way. And so even though, as Stacy has sometimes said in our private correspondence, you know, it gets tiresome having to re-explain the wheel to people, particularly on gender issues. Nevertheless, it is heartening that people are willing to talk, even if it is kind of tiresome to have to go back to square one because there's somebody new who just hasn't heard it all before.
Thank you for staying a little bit late. We appreciate your attendance and participation.